Hey everybody, J.J. Cooper, Ben Badler, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast Deep Dives. And today we are looking at one of the most interesting and one of the deepest farm systems in baseball, the Milwaukee Brewers, who have had a very busy offseason. Ben, I feel like you wrote a top 30, and then there's been a lot of movement since then with the top 30. Obviously, very significantly, the Freddie Peralta deal. We had the trade that, as we were recording this just yesterday with the Red Sox, where the Brewers seem to send a bushel of third base types over to the Red Sox and got pitching depth in return, and Kyle Harrison and Shane Drouin, in addition to utility infielder David Hamilton. It's been a busy offseason for a team that I guess, is it fair to say with the Milwaukee Brewers, they never really stand still?
Yeah, they're not going to go out and sign, you know, Kyle Tucker or, you know, the tier or maybe even two tiers below that in free agency. But what they have done is they built an outstanding farm system, and they keep it replenished. And, you know, it's tough when you, I don't want to say you have to trade Freddie Peralta, but, you know, those are the moves that in their position that they're in, with what, you know, ownership is willing or unwilling to spend, they make those deals to try to keep themselves, you know, keep the talent sustainable and growing through the future. And they already had one of the best farm systems in baseball, and now they got a whole handful of new toys to come through and guys too who should be able to make an impact right away this year. Obviously, you're not going to replace the impact that Freddie Peralta has at the top of your rotation, but it's a strong farm system throughout. It's deep. There's talent at the upper levels, the lower levels, position prospects, pitchers too. It checks all the boxes you're really looking to see in an upper tank type farm system.
And the other thing they've done is the Brewers do a really good job, I feel like, of acquiring kind of semi-free talent. We saw multiple players they've traded now. Isaac Collins, who had a very good year for them last year. Andrew Monasterio. They're minor league free agents or minor league rule five picks in the case of Collins, who then end up making it to the big leagues. Anthony Siegler, another minor league rule free agent who was signed and then becomes value in a trade. But they keep churning it. You said that they're going to, you know, some of the guys they got back are going to have immediate impacts. We'll obviously talk a little bit about Jett Williams. The other thing I kind of feel like with these most recent trades, they cleared the decks of a lot of kind of upper level utility player infielder types, where you look at them right now and they're a little bit thinner as far as big league experienced infielders right now. You know, you still have Joey Ortiz, you still have Bryce Terang, Jett Williams probably fits in there somewhere, but I kind of wonder if this is going to also mean that they're kind of maybe the ETA for some of the guys like a Cooper Pratt or other guys who were, you know, Cooper Pratt was at AA last year. Do you feel like that there might be another move down the road here? I mean, because I look at third base right now and go, okay, you could slide Ortiz over, but I don't know if you want Jett Williams to be your everyday shortstop. It feels like there's still one more move to make, or there's something coming down the road maybe to kind of make all this fit together in the long term.
Potentially. I think Cooper Pratt is going to start the year in AAA. I think the Brewers certainly would love for him to have a big offensive year and force his way into the big league picture. I don't think there's any questions certainly that they have about his defense being ready to play in the big leagues right now, but you know, he didn't light it up offensively last year either. I think he's going to need maybe a full season in AAA. So I don't know that he's going to necessarily force his way into the picture. With Terang, you do have that flexibility where, I mean, he's a phenomenal defender at second base. If you wanted to move him to shortstop, you could. Maybe Jett Williams is in the opening day roster picture for them or forces his way there pretty soon. I'm not 100% sure if there's another move coming or not. But the Brewers certainly, you know, looking beyond 2026, are of some pretty stacked infield options that'll be coming certainly by 2027.
Well, speaking of that, the first question we ask on this every week, every time, is how difficult was the decision to rank the number one prospect? In the case of Jesus Mate, obviously this was an easy answer. Jesus Mate is one of the best prospects in baseball. But like as you were doing the work on this and all, what stood out about Mate? What kind of, you've covered the international talent kind of procurement for us for years now. What makes Mate kind of special among the group of elite international prospects who kind of have moved pretty quickly?
He's just an extremely complete hitter, at least as much as you can be when you're 18 years old. He's moved extremely quickly, and he's hit at every level that he's been at. He hit at low A. They pushed him aggressively. I mean, even just going to low A last year as an 18-year-old was an aggressive assignment. Looked totally comfortable there. Got bumped to high A, and where you saw, Luis Peña get promoted with him, and we saw some more holes with Peña that were not surprising. Mate just continued to rake at a high level. I mean, he's kind of on that Jackson Churio type path to get to the big leagues at a, probably by 20 years old. He's a switch hitter. It's a good swing from both sides of the plate. There's a lot of bat speed. He makes really good swing decisions. He makes a ton of contact. The adjustability of his swing stands out. He recognizes pitches, so it doesn't matter if it's, up, down, in, out, fastball, breaking ball, changeup. He just has a knack for putting the barrel to the ball, and the bat speed is there, that the power is there, and he's not fully physically mature yet. I mean, this is still a pretty lean teenage hitter. Now there's other tools there too. He can run, he can throw, TBD on some of the defensive stuff, but as an 18-year-old hitter, there's not too much more you can ask for.
You just said like TBD on the defense. You just said he's a teenager still, who's still filling out. Is your sense that this is a long-term shortstop, or is this someone who may end up, partly just because of strength gains and things like that, could end up maybe sliding to a second or third long-term, or where do you kind of see him most likely ending up?
I think it depends on a few things, some of which is just, the same thing for a lot of prospects is just, okay, well, who are your teammates going to be by the time you get to the big league? So I think he has the tools and the traits to develop into a major league shortstop. He's athletic. He runs well. I don't think speed is everything for a shortstop, but he is quick. He is athletic. He does have a strong arm. But it's not, I think hitting comes extremely naturally to him. I wouldn't say the same thing about defense. This things with just like his internal clock and how dependable he is on some of the routine plays. I think some of that can come with time and experience. I also don't think, like most 18-year-olds, you have a lot of time to get better defensively. Like in his case, I think he's going to be ready to be a major league hitter by the time he's 20 years old. So is he going to be ready by then? I don't know. If he has to go to third base, if he has to go to second base, it doesn't really matter to me. The offensive upside, the offensive profile there is good enough to be a perennial all-star at either spots. And then look, Cooper Pratt is ahead of him in the organization right now, not in terms of the prospect ranking, but Cooper Pratt is a level ahead of him. He's going to start the year in Triple A.
He'll be a Triple A.
Yeah. If Cooper Pratt ends up developing into, if the offensive game is good enough to be an everyday big leaguer, he's going to be their shortstop of the future. Cooper Pratt will be, I should say. And then Mate, whether it's second base, third base, I see how the composition of the Brewers infield looks like a couple of years down the road. But I think Cooper Pratt certainly has the inside track to be the Brewers shortstop, even if Mate is just a better overall prospect.
Hey, I will note with that, like this is kind of fits very much with kind of the Brewers approach. You just mentioned Bryce Turang, who's been their stud second baseman defensively, was a shortstop all the way through the minors. Joey Ortiz has played shortstop. He's also played third base for them. There's been a number of guys that they've brought up who are shortstops who then slide around the infield. I do want to ask, you mentioned about Pratt, but Luis Peña obviously was started that year on the same team with Made. And Made is basically kind of on a rocket ship of a development path. Peña was on a, I would say, still a very fast path, even though not the same level of speed of getting to double A at the end of the year. In another organization, I think that this would be kind of the cornerstone prospect that kind of you would love to hang your hat on as a number one, wouldn't it? Like the guy who has made the strides that he has made already as a prospect, your professional.
Yeah, or he'd be the best international signing from a lot of teams, 2024 classes. But like every step of the way, he's like, you know, I'm sure he appreciates Jesus Made, and I know they're close friends, but it's obviously like, yeah, well, Luis Peña is really, really good, but also just, you know, nobody's quite Jesus Made, unless you're, I guess, Connor Griffin or Kevin McGonigal. But yeah, I mean, Luis Peña, you know, he's even faster than Jesus Made, stole a ton of bases. He has outstanding hand-eye coordination. I mean, he very rarely swings and misses. He got a lot stronger this season too. So you saw the exit velocities jump. So a combination of bat-to-ball skills with some impact there, and obviously the speed too. The two risk factors with him are, yeah, he can hit just about everything, or at least put the bat to the ball in just about anything. But sometimes, too often, he's trying to put the bat on the ball on pitches that are outside the strike zone or borderline pitches. So he's going to need to tighten up his selectivity. We saw that when he got promoted to high A at the end of the season. And, you know, look, he's 18 years old and it's the end of the season. Maybe he's run down. No, like, real major concerns there. But he is going to have to improve his strike zone judgment and start swinging at better pitches. And then defensively, sure, like, there are questions about where does Made ultimately end up fitting. With Peña, it's an even bigger question. I think it's a very slim shot that he ever plays shortstop in the big leagues. It's more of a question of, does he stay in the infield? Or, hey, look, I mean, he's a 70 runner, he go play potentially center field. Now it's the Brewers, so they have a pretty high bar for center field defense, and they have a whole bunch of center fielders at every outfield position. So maybe he ends up, flexing back and forth between the outfield, the infield. I mean, ideally, he would improve his defense enough in the infield to stay, you know, whether it's second base, third base. Either way, it's a really good, an appealing offensive profile with the bat to ball skills, the damage that he's come into over the past year, and the speed that he has, and certainly has the athleticism to make adjustments. Just defense doesn't clearly come quite as naturally to him as the offensive side.
I would say there's also that there's not the same kind of flexibility, fluidity to him. Like trying to watch a lot of him this past year, the shortstops, the natural shortstops, are the guys who, when they go to the ground, it's like they go to the ground and get back up, and it's all this amazing. Like, again, the example I always love to point to is, think of what Trey Turner looks like when Trey Turner slides into home bait, you know, home plate, and you're like, wow, how did he manage to make that look like he was just doing something naturally? Peña is a guy who, when he goes to the ground, getting back up is not a fluid, you know, like just pops back up. There's some effort involved. It's a little bit more, things just take a little bit more work for him than like when we talk about a Made or a Pratt. But again, this is the guy who is a really advanced bat with really loud tools, who has already impressed in full season ball at a time when most of his contemporaries are kind of hoping this year to get to full season ball. That would be a great development for them. I kind of want to go to the next question we have, you know, which is, how is the system better or worse than last year? And it's even changed. You mentioned Williams. We also should probably talk about Brandon Sproat a little bit too. This system has reinforced and added significant reinforcements even since we did the handbook a couple of months ago. Like, where do you kind of put the state of the system right now?
I think they have a case to be the best farm system in baseball. We have the Pirates number one, and you know, I think they certainly deserve recognition in that spot. But if you look at it like, okay, like Connor Griffin is just like a special talent. So the Pirates get credit for having Connor Griffin, but like, okay, let's even just set aside Jesus Madé and then set aside Connor Griffin, like 2 through 30, who has a deeper farm system. I would say it's the Brewers, and the Brewers have high end talent too, right? Obviously we talked about Madé and Peña and Cooper Pratt, and now you're adding Jet Williams and Brandon Sproat to Logan Henderson. Okay, that's what, 6 top 100 prospects right there. Their top 10, I think, is one of the strongest top 10s in the game. And I think top 30, I mean, you get to the back of their top 30. You and I have been here for a long time at BA, JJ. We've written some good systems. We've written some very bad farm systems over the years. And there's some systems where you get to 30 or you get to 20, or sometimes even before then, you're struggling to be like, let me try to find some guys I like. Whereas in the Brewer system, you get to 30. You know, there's guys I like that I'm still leaving off, or just even, especially in that 15 to 30 range, there's a bunch of guys who, man, there's a lot of breakout type guys here who could really make a move up next year. Young arms that I like, or guys who are just closer to being ready where, okay, there's not huge ultimate upside, but yeah, like these guys are going to be, you know, have a chance at least to be quality big league components of in some capacity.
The thing that stands out to me is you could look at the middle of this 30, and I'm sure that someone looking at it, just looking at the ranking number, is going to be like, oh, so Ben, you must really be down on Brady Ebel, who was a first round pick for them. Or clearly you don't believe that Luke Adams is going to be able to translate this to the big leagues. Robert Gasser, this guy could be in the rotation for them at some point in 2026. Mm-hmm. How is he so low? And then you look, because it's the guys ahead of them, and you're like, someone has to slot behind. I mean, that, yeah, the middle of this, the teams on this list is a list that if you took it, picked it up, we just did the Rockies deep dive. If you took the middle of the teams on this Brewers list and said, okay, you just put Luke Adams, Brady Ebel, and Robert Gasser on the Rockies, I think they're ranking somewhere in the 3-4-5 range. That's probably about where they would fit.
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it. When, yeah, a lot of times, sometimes when I'm ranking this farm system, like, how can this guy be number 14, or this guy be number 12, or even, you know, how can Josh Adamczewski be, I think he's number 11 now. That seems way too low. But who am I going to, I don't want to take any of the guys ahead of him down, but it's just that group in the teens, that 11 to 20 group would be a better than some teams' top tens.
And so is it reasonable to think there are a number of these guys? We mentioned just Gasser a second ago, but Jet Williams and Brandon Sproat, who rank now 4 and 5 after we've updated, are they the most likely to make a significant impact in 26, or are there other players who could probably fit in that, hey, this guy is big league ready, or at least close enough that we're going to see him, you know, significantly this year?
Yeah, those two guys would be big ones. Logan Henderson, obviously we got to see him toward the tail end of last season. He got hurt. I think if he had gotten hurt earlier in the season, maybe, like, I think he was healthy enough to come back by the end of it. But I don't think the Brewers want to just like throw him back into the fire coming off of an injury into the postseason mix. But I think we saw just a lot of strikes, really advanced changeup. The fastball plays above its raw velocity, doesn't really have much of a breaking ball. That was always a big concern of mine when he's in the lower levels, but he's done it now at every level, including in the big leagues in some, you know, small sample size. But I expect him to come in and be, you know, if he can stay healthy, which is a big question with him, be a back end starter. So I think he's one. And then Jefferson Quiro is a big wild card for the Brewers, because by the end of the year, the bat looked like what we had seen prior to his shoulder injury that required surgery and wiped out basically his entire 2024 season. A lot of the defense looked the same as it did before, except for one part of his game, which was the throwing, because before he got hurt, He had a 70 arm. He's one of the best defensive catchers in the minor leagues. I would not have been surprised if, you know, Jefferson Carroll ended up winning a Gold Glove one day based on what we saw prior to his injury. But last season when he came back, not a big surprise because it was a shoulder surgery, but the arm strength just was not there. He really struggled to throw out runners. The pop times were way down. The raw arm strength was way down. I mean, a lot of times it was a 40 arm instead of the 70 arm that we had seen before, you know, maybe flash a 45 arm at times, but I don't know. Like he was one of the hardest players to rank because I feel like he's not, whatever it is, the ultimate outcome with Jefferson Carroll, I feel like he's not ranked in the right place because either the arm strength doesn't return, and if it doesn't, you know, then you go from a guy who was an elite defensive catcher to a much bigger question mark about if you can count on him to catch if you want somebody who can control the running game. Whereas if it comes back, you know, maybe not all the way right to a 70 arm, but if it's, you know, a 55 arm,
50 like, even
50, sure. Yeah. Okay. And then I feel like this guy probably should be a top 100 prospect. And maybe that happens just getting a little bit further away from surgery. But we'll see. That's the big question mark with him. The good thing, obviously, for the Brewers is like, hey, we don't need Jefferson Carroll to come in and like be our everyday catcher right now. But I think he can come in, be the backup, get acclimated to the big leagues that way. And I think certainly there's a lot more upside with him than maybe like, you know, his organizational prospect ranking might reflect.
And again, we just laid out, this is a team that has a ton of guys ahead of him who face a little bit less of a question like that. This is not a knock on Cuero. It's just a real actual question that we can't have an answer to right now. There's a lot of uncertainty to this. That is also kind of a fascinating part of it. But okay, Mate is likely, I would say, you just kind of laid it out as well. Like you said, he's kind of on the Churio timetable. If we go Churio timetable, that kind of puts him on the opening day roster 2027. Seems very unlikely that he is going to graduate, though, in 26. If he doesn't graduate, I really struggle to imagine someone else becoming their number one prospect for next year. But who would be next up after Mate as far as the guys who are still going to be eligible? Is it Pena? I mean, or is there someone else who could kind of climb to that spot, that next up behind Mate?
Yeah, I think the question for Mate is like, is he going to be the number one prospect in all of baseball next year, not just in the Brewers farm system? Because after him, yeah, I think probably Luis Pena would have to be the strongest candidate, right? We talked about all the things to like with him. They're the same age. He's obviously not going to graduate either. Whereas, you know, Cooper Pratt, Jett Williams, Brandon Sproat, those guys all should graduate. Logan Henderson, you know, if there are some sneaky candidates for somebody who could maybe be a number one prospect in another organization where Jesus Mate is not in your farm system, Bishop Letson, I think, is an interesting one. He's going to have to stay healthy, but right-handed pitcher, outstanding extension, like elite, like some of the best extension in baseball, pitches from this really low release high for a 6'4" pitcher, throws strikes, has a good slider, up to like 96, 97. But you could see there's this physical upside to throw even harder, had success in Double A, but, you know, very limited sample because he got hurt last year. But I think he's got a chance to move way up if he can stay healthy. I just don't know if that's going to be the case. And always, you know, pitchers are very volatile, but, you know, that could be a negative. It could also be volatile on the way up next year. And I think the Brewers have certainly shown the ability to maximize their young arms.
They seem to be pretty good at developing pitchers year after year after year after year. Both theirs and then guys like Quinn Priester, where like they get them in a minute and a half. They get more out of him than the previous, you know, multiple organizations had who were thought to be pretty good at developing pitching. But speaking of that, The Rockies deep dive, Jesus was stuck in the difficult question of what are the Rockies good at developing? And we really he kind of struggled, understandably, to come up with a good answer. With the Brewers, I almost feel like we could ask, what is this organization not good at developing? Because they have, as you noted, they're pretty, if not homegrown all the time, they're either homegrown or kind of low-cost deals, because this is not a team that spends a ton of money. And this is a team that is in the playoffs pretty much year in, year out. And I know someone's going to say, well, when are they going to win a World Series? But I'll say this from them, they keep giving themselves chances. They've produced a Jackson Churio and a Jacob Mizorowski in recent years. And that's just two of many highlights. We talked about Bryce Terang. We could talk about, they got Andrew Vaughn basically as a low-cost pickup and seemed to somewhat fix him in, again, a minute and a half after he arrived, after he had been struggling for years with the White Sox. But what is it that kind of stands out? What is kind of the Brewers' way, and what is it that they're good at doing as far as their farm system development?
Yeah, they're pretty good both in scouting and player development in really all lanes, all avenues. They're good at developing pitching. You can just see the number of high school pitchers that are in their organization, late round guys that have good traits that have ticked up since they drafted those players. I think it's just like a combination of scouting and player development on that side. They don't draft maybe quite as many college arms as some other teams, but then you see like a Tyson Harden, who was a 12th round pick out of college, wasn't very good in college and was very good last year. Again, another example of like, man, he feels like he's ranked way too low, and maybe he is, but I don't want to move the guys who are ahead of him down anymore. So I think just overall in pitching, they do a good job. Catching, they have a very strong reputation, and deservedly so.
If I could just interject there, I think that they have done a better job of developing catcher defense in guys like Contreras, obviously being a prime example of this. But it's not just Contreras. It's been over and over. When a guy comes into the Brewers organization, even if he's faced defensive questions, often he gets better defensively, which then means you have an offensive catcher who also is good defensively. They've done that on multiple occasions, I feel like, over the last 10 years.
Yeah, I guess the biggest complaint maybe that I hear more like from Brewers fans, we don't have enough power in our lineup, right? Like, it's a lot of very contact oriented guys who don't have a ton of juice. I think that's more so than development. That's just sort of the players that they go after, right? That they target. They target guys in both in the draft and international free agency who make a ton of contact, have good bat to ball skills, right? They make good swing decisions. They have a good understanding of the strike zone, but maybe aren't like the big present raw power guys. But also you do see, So I think there's some limitations for what your power expectations should be on the development side of the coin. But also like Bryce Terang was never a big power guy coming up in the minor leagues, and they've managed to squeeze more power out of him. So I don't think it's a developmental weakness necessarily that they have. And they do have other guys, in the farm system now who have bigger power, like a Brock Wilkin or Eric Batanti, Blake Burke, those guys who, obviously have question marks themselves about position and maybe swing and miss in some cases. But I think they have shown that they can get some more power out of guys. It's just the types of players that they've targeted and that they have acquired haven't fit like that big power hitting mold that I know some fans want to see more of out of their lineup.
There's not a whole lot that they haven't done at least some part of. And power, the other thing I wonder about that is we've seen that there's a long talk conversation about that run prevention often is a way that's a little less expensive to keep guys who can defend than it is big offensive numbers. But I also think if you have that philosophy, it like you mentioned, their outfield, this is not a team that's going to put a big thumper who's a 30 defender in left field. This is the team who puts guys in left field, center field, and right field who can all cover a lot of ground, who can all turn fly balls into outs, line drives into outs. You look around the infield, they do the same thing. Like, they have shortstop caliber players who could play shortstop for you in the major leagues, often playing second base, shortstop, and third base, and they always have good defensive catchers. I do think that they kind of look at that as trading off sometimes a little bit of power because they're not willing to sacrifice the defense. This is, I think, helps why their pitching is so good as well. All of this all seems to kind of fuse together. And it's, again, it's a fascinating organization. That's the end of the video portion of this. But if you are listening on the podcast, stick around, right? We'll be talking more about sleepers and all right after this quick break. And if you're on the video side, just head over to our podcast feed and you can hear much more about this as we go beyond the top 10. As we just already mentioned, there are a lot of prospects worth watching. And we'll be back right after this quick break. So, Ben, we just said this is a team that we didn't even cover everyone in the top 10. But when you look past the top 10, pretty much for one thing, you look past the top 10 and that's where you get their 2025 draft, right? Like, there are some interesting players they drafted this year, and they're almost all like, they, again, normally your first round picks kind of slot in 4, 5, 6, you know, if you maybe 1, 2, 3, if you drafted at the top. Sorting out here, and you've got guys who I feel like that there's such a wide range. You have a Blake Burke here and an Eric Batonti who are kind of like, you know, then you have an Andrew Fisher, so you got that type, but then you've got like in the Luke Adams and the Brady Ebels, and who are some of the guys who stand out to you in this kind of beyond the 10 on this Brewers list?
I guess with the trade with the Mets, they ended up squeezing out Josh Adamczewski from their top 10. And I really liked Josh Adamczewski, second baseman, played a lot of left field in the Arizona Fall League, defensively TBD. Like, let's start with the good, I guess, with Josh Adamczewski, which is not on the defensive side. It's the bad. I mean, it's a really sweet, pure left-handed swing. It's the type of swing you see in a hitting textbook. Like, that's how you draw it up, tight turn of the barrel, a lot of adjustability to the swing, stays through the hitting zone for a long time, and can drive the ball with some impact too. I think this is a guy who has a chance to end up being a top 100 prospect. It's very much an offensive oriented player, and I'd like to see the defense get better enough to the point where he can stay at second base. Like we've talked about this whole episode, Brewers have a pretty high bar for defense, and especially in the middle infield right now. So I don't know if it ends up staying there. If he ends up being a trade chip, I think he's going to be a very high demand trade chip. I just think this guy, you know, we saw him hitting low A, he got hurt in the second half of the season, so we didn't see him hit obviously at the upper levels, but I don't see anything in what he does that's going to prevent him from hitting higher up. You mentioned Andrew Fisher too, certainly not a sleeper by any means. He was their first round pick, but obviously a lot to like offensively. Everybody I think knows that. What surprised me was that, hey, this guy was a first baseman at Tennessee. They drafted him and said, no, he's going to play third base for us. He had some third base experience in college, but usually college first basemen don't end up moving to a more challenging defensive position in pro ball.
Even if they talk about it, like Spencer Torkelson was like, no, he's going to be a third baseman. And then like, as soon as he got to the pro ball, it's like, yeah, okay. Yeah. That was just saying that, you're a first. Fisher actually did it. That's he was primarily a third baseman when he came out.
Not only did he do it, but I watched every play, every ground ball that he took. And I'm not saying he's going to win a gold glove, but I do actually think he has a chance to stick at third base. Like the hands are there, the arm strength is there. I think he moves well side to side, maybe like coming in on balls he didn't look comfortable there, but how many times are you charging in on a ball at first base? So maybe that's just some experience. I think he could, whether it's for the Brewers or somewhere else, I think he has a chance to be a legitimate major league third baseman. Maybe the Brewers have more need at first base, so maybe he ends up flipping back over to first base long term. We'll see. But that's one guy. That's somebody who I do actually think has a legitimate chance to stay at the position. And then the Brewers just draft you know, I wrote a story about they just draft more high school players in rounds, you know, 11 to 20 than any other team. So they just have this plethora of like really interesting arms, young pitchers with a lot of traits that you like. And one of them that I really like is Ethan Dorchies, who, okay, not 11 to 20, he was a 10th round pick, but signed for post 10th round money, basically. Really small, you know, it looks like a smaller signing bonus guy. He was a high school pitcher out of Illinois that they drafted in 2024. 6'6", like 225 pounds. Not, there's nothing like overwhelming right now, but he, you know, he has feel for a whole bunch of different weapons to attack you with, whether it's the fastball that's up to 96. I think that Brewers can squeeze a little bit more juice out of the tank with him. Slider, splitter, cutter in there as well. Good control, throws a lot of strikes, like good release traits, gets down the mound really well with good extension, you know, mixes two and four seamers in there. So I know he definitely impressed a lot of people in the Arizona Complex League last year. And then also once he got up to the Carolina League, and you know, he's also just super young for that class. So he's 18 years old all of last season. So if I had to like pick a young breakout arm in the system, he'd be my guy.
You touched on, this is something that if you haven't read the piece that Ben wrote, I'll try to link it in the show notes here, but you wrote about the Brewers kind of taking a little bit of a different approach draft wise than other teams, and kind of the payoff that they've had of kind of not treating, I'd say day three, now it's day two, but not treating right. The 11th through 20th round as the area to just say, okay, well, now let's just draft college guys to fill out rosters and all. Could you give, if someone hasn't read it, again, I'm going to link to it, but give people a little bit, if you haven't read that, like a sneak peek of kind of what stood out to you about how the Brewers have done things a little bit differently in the draft.
Yeah. So just, you know, as you go through the, you know, or as I was writing up the Brewers top 30, you don't have to go too far down the 30 to see, oh, all right, like Bishop Letson, like interesting, like high school pitcher, 11th round pick, was a Purdue commit, you know, got like a modest, you know, reasonable, like 500,000 ish signing bonus. Luke Adams, another Midwestern high school pitcher, committed to Michigan State. They draft him late round, smaller, you know, 200,000 or so bonus. There's like a bunch of guys like that. Josh Adamczewski, you know, in a similar boat, similar example, or you know, Dorchie is kind of the same way. And then you look at their draft last year, they just jumped out how many high school pitchers, or excuse me, well, high school pitchers, but just high school players they took after the 10th round. And, you know, just went and looked at the data over, you know, since the draft went to 20 rounds in 2021, you know, how many high school players are they drafting in rounds 11 to 20 compared to other teams? And it really wasn't close. Like the Brewers are very aggressively, not just drafting, because you know, some teams will draft high school players like a late round flyer, like a backup plan in case some earlier signing doesn't work out and they pivot and they sign a different player. But the Brewers are aggressively targeting drafting and signing high school players way more than any other club in those 11th to 20th rounds. And it, you know, you're seeing it pay off, and guys like Letson or Adamczewski or Luke Adams. And look, I'm sure most of those guys, like of those three, probably two of them won't pan out, right? But they've already created some value there. They're getting good prospects that way. Guys like, you know, like a Jaden Dubanowicz too. Like there's just, you can see there's other players in their top 30 right now, or maybe even just outside the cusp of their top 30 that are good prospects that they've gotten through that strategy. And okay, I sure, like there's some opportunity cost there because you're drafting fewer college players, but you look at the players who were drafted out of college just from all teams after the 10th round since 2021. Okay, like you got like a Caleb Durbin, you know, the Brewers didn't draft him, they traded for him, but there's just not that many great college players in those rounds, which makes sense because for the first like 10 rounds, like obviously, like, you know, the high school players still go in the first few rounds, but certainly by like rounds 4 or 5, like then teams are just going like college. Like, we got to sign these guys. We can't take, you know, the risk of not signing a high school player and losing bonus pool space there and screwing up our whole draft. So a lot of even the second and third tier college guys are gone by that point, whereas the Brewers are saying, okay, like, we're not going just through our, you know, our draft board and just picking off the very top high school players. We're going to take high school players who we do like, who we think are signable. So doing a lot of homework, obviously, on that end, to both identify the talent and get the signability right on a, you know, a Luke Adams or a Josh Adamczewski or some of these other guys. And I think it's paid off for them. And my expectation is we will, maybe to the Brewers' chagrin, see some other teams drafting some more high school players beyond the 10th round than they otherwise have in previous years this year.
So last year on your 31-40, you had Isaac Collins, who ended up, you know, this is what ranking the Brewers and kind of the nightmare that is, because the depth they have.
He was originally tucked into the back of their top 30, and then they made, I don't remember what, like all trade or acquisition they made that knocked him out.
So this year, like, if someone looks at the 30, they may say, well, what about Colbin Crow? They added the 40. He's number, I think, 32 this year. And again, this just goes back to, this is not, I don't even think, like, if you read your report on Colbin Crow, you pretty make it pretty clear that this guy could be in the big leagues this year at some point. Like, he's part of the,
I'm sure he will. Yeah.
Yeah. The many, many pitchers who will kind of fit in that group of who's the next ups for them. But this goes back to, this is the depth of this system, is that guys like that, it's kind of hard to say, like, okay, do you like him or do you like, you know, the Bryce McHodges of, you know, the world? Like, that, there's just, the depth of this system is pretty absurd, is it not?
Yeah, yeah. The back of their top 30 is still really strong. There's, you know, guys outside the top 30 that I like. You know, like, you look at, I mean, I'm just looking in their 20s right now, where it's, yeah, whether it's, you know, like young arms like a Bryce Message and Josh Noth coming back from surgery, Jaden Dubanowitz, another one of those, like, you know, late round high school arms for them, was just got like intriguing projection type traits, handle free Encarnacion, like, just not sure ultimately like what the upside is going to be, but it's a really nice left-handed swing, like, hitterish looking guy. Or, like, you know, like Manuel Rodriguez is one of the more fascinating arms to me, where, I mean, you know, you just look at his numbers and his age. I mean, this guy got to Double A at the end of the season. I think he had just turned 20 years old in August. This guy has outstanding command, pitchability. He's moved quickly. He's dominated at every level. He just, you know, maybe every now and then will like scrape a 91, right? So, like, is that going to work higher up? Like, if it stays, you know, as an upper 80s fastball, touch a 91, no. But, like, this guy just turned 20 years old. I think there is some more upside in there. He throws an incredible amount of strikes. It's like this really unusual fastball with a ton of spin and some cutting action to it, and he hides the ball really well too, so there's deception. I think there's like a quality slider and cutter in there too. So with him, it's just, okay, can he throw harder? Because look, there are obviously exceptions of guys who can make it work, who, you know, top out in the low 90s, but the odds are probably not. But sometimes guys can come into more velocity later on. And look, up until last year, this guy was still a teenager. So, like, this is a guy who's in the very back of their 30 and has been a dominant pitcher reaching Double A as a 20-year-old. That's a pretty good sign, I think, if that guy's tucked away at the back of your 30.
It's a fascinating system, but that's true. You know, you've got a good fun system to play with every year here, and one that you know to never write everything in ink at the start of the off season, because as you mentioned, usually there are moves that move guys around. But that is our deep dive look at the Milwaukee Brewers farm system. We're getting there. We are rounding. We're getting at least coming close to third base on our round of going around the entirety of the major leagues for our deep dives. We will keep rolling these out. Thank you, Ben, for joining us. And thank you, by the way, for the download. Please like and review. Your reviews of our podcast help other people find the podcast. We appreciate that. And check out this, and I'll link several of these in the show notes, but so much stuff about this, about the top 30, the 31 to 40 prospects, and Ben's story about kind of how the Brewers have done things a little bit differently in the draft. All worth checking out over at baseballamerica.com. For Ben, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.